The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Statmiller, with you on this 20th day of August, 2019. And on today's program, we're going to get deep. So if you're looking for the flash headlines, like Mike Rivero does, covers a lot of different subjects. If you're not into the deep aspect of the deep state, well, then go mow your lawn, cook dinner, go take a shower, go outside, play with the dog and the kids. Because what I'm going to do today, with limited commercial, is present to you some outstanding journalism. Whitney Webb, she's a Mint Press news journalist based in Chile. And she's contributed to several independent media outlets, including Global Research, EcoWatch, Ron Paul Institute, 21st Century Wire, among others. She's been on radio and TV, but not that much, because of what she covers. She's a 2019 winner of the Serena Shim Award for Uncompromised Integrity and Journalism. Now, while we're watching the news talk about Mr. Barr in our Justice Department, and he's going to investigate the prison that Mr. Epstein was apparently allowed to commit suicide in. Folks, they're all jumping and dodging. They're scared in Washington, D.C. Because you've heard me say on this program before, what you're seeing in Washington, D.C., the Comeys, et al., these are just the actors. These are the lower on the rung of the quote-unquote swamp. These are the foot soldiers. These are the low-ranking guys. Not the ones that wield the policies and agenda and control the money. And it has to do with a mega group, the Maxwells and the Mossad, the spy story at the heart of the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. And the picture that's going to be painted for you by the evidence, notice I didn't say conjecture, is not a direct Epstein tie to a single intelligence agency, but a web linking key members of the mega group, politicians and officials in both the U.S. and Israel, and an organized crime network with deep business and intelligence ties in both nations. A billionaire pedophile and alleged sex trafficker, Jeffrey Epstein, sits in prison. Reports have continued to surface about his reported links to intelligence, his financial ties to several companies and charitable foundations, and his friendship with the rich and powerful, as well as the top politicians. Now, be mindful, what was the day that Mr. Epstein, Mike, allegedly killed himself? This story came out August 7th. We posted it on the 8th. And this is the third part of the series. There's part one and part two. I am certainly not going to have the time to do that. But this this third installment covers breadth and depth. And you'll hear me make reference to part one and part two. That is on our website, republicbroadcasting.org. I would highly suggest that you go there, read it, take the time. I know that you're busy. I know that you got things you'd much rather do. But if you want to understand who's controlling whom, who's running the charade, you need to take a look at this and then pass it on. His financial ties to several companies and charitable foundations, and his friendships with the rich and powerful as well as top politicians. While part one and part two of the series, Jeffrey Epstein Scandal, Too Big to Fail, have focused on the widespread nature of sexual blackmail operations in recent American history and their ties to the height of the American political power in the U.S. intelligence community, one key aspect of Epstein's own sex trafficking and blackmail operation that warrants examination is Epstein's ties to Israeli intelligence and his ties to the informal pro-Israel philanthropic organization faction known as the Mega Group. The Mega Group's role in the Epstein case has garnered some attention. As Epstein's main financial patron for decades, billionaire Leslie Wexner was a co-founder of the group that unites several well-known businessmen with a penchant for pro-Israel and ethno-philanthropy. However, as this report will demonstrate, another uniting factor among the Mega Group members is the deep ties to organized crime, specifically the organized crime network discussed in part one of the series, which was largely led by notorious American mobster Meyer Lansky. By virtue of the role of many Mega Group members as political donors in both the U.S. and Israel, several of the most notable members have close ties to the governments of both countries as well as their intelligence communities. As this report and subsequent report will show, the Mega Group also had close ties to two businessmen who worked for Israel's Mossad, Robert Maxwell and Mark Rich, as well as top Israeli politicians, including past and present prime ministers with deep ties to Israel's intelligence community. One of those businessmen working for the Mossad, Robert Maxwell, is going to be discussed at length in this report. Maxwell, who was a business partner of the Mega Group co-founder, Charles Bronfman, aided the successful Mossad plot to plant a trapdoor in U.S.-created software that was then sold to governments and companies throughout the world. That plot's success was largely due to the role of a close associate of then-President Ronald Reagan and an American politician close to Maxwell, who later helped aid Reagan in the cover-up of the Iran-Contra scandal. Years later, Maxwell's daughter, Ghislaine Maxwell, would join Jeffrey Epstein's inner circle. At the same time, Epstein was bankrolling a similar software program now being marketed for critical electronic infrastructure in the U.S. and abroad. That company has deep and troubling connections to the Israeli military intelligence, associates of Donald Trump administration, and the Mega Group. Epstein, to have ties to Israeli intelligence and has well-documented ties to influential Israeli politicians and the Mega Group. Yet those entities are not isolated in and of themselves, as many also connect to organized crime network and powerful alleged pedophiles discussed in previous installments of this series. Perhaps the best illustration of how the connection between many of these players often meld together can be seen in Ronald Lauder, a Mega Group member, former member of the Reagan administration, longtime donor to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel's Likud party, as well as longtime friend of Donald Trump and Roy Cohn. From cosmetics heir to political player, now one often overlooked yet famous client and friend of Roy Cohn is the billionaire heir to the Estee Lauder cosmetic fortune. Ronald Lauder, Lauder's often described in the press as a leading Jewish philanthropist and is president of the World Jewish Congress, yet his many media profiles tend to leave out this highly political past. In a statement given by Lauder to New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman in 2018, the cosmetics heir noted that he has known Trump for over 50 years, going back at least to the early 70s. According to Lauder, his relationship with Trump began when Trump was a student at Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, which Lauder also attended. Though the exact nature of their early friendship is unclear, it is evident that they shared many of the same connections, including to the man who would later count them both as his clients, Roy Cohn. While much has been said of the ties between Cohn and Trump, Cohn was particularly close to Lauder's mother, Estee Lauder, born Josephie Metzner. Estee was even counted among Cohn's most high-profile friends in his New York Times obituary. A small window into the Lauder-Cohn relationship surfaced briefly in a 2016 article in Politico about a 1981 dinner party held at Cohn's weekend home in Greenwich, Connecticut. The party was attended by Ronald Lauder's parents, Estee and Joe, as well as Trump and his then-wife, Ivana, who had a weekend home just 2 miles away. That party was held soon after Cohn had helped Reagan secure the presidency and had reached the height of his political influence. At the party, Cohn offered toast to Reagan and to then-Senator of New York, Alphonse D. Amato, who would later urge Ronald Lauder to run for political office. 2 years later, in 1983, Ronald Lauder, whose only professional experience at that point was working for his parents' cosmetic company, was appointed to serve as United States Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for European and NATO Affairs. Soon after his appointment, he served on the Dinner Tribute Committee for a dinner hosted by Jewish fraternal and strongly pro-Israel organization, B'nai B'rith, the parent organization of the controversial Anti-Defamation League. In Roy Cohn's honor, Cohn's influential father, Albert Cohn, was the longtime president of B'nai B'rith, powerful New England, New York chapter, and Roy Cohn himself was a member of the B'nai B'rith Banking and Financial Lodge. The dinner specifically sought to honor Cohn for his pro-Israel advocacy and his efforts to fortify Israel's economy, and its honorary chairman, including media mogul Rupert Murdoch, Donald Trump, and then head of Bear Stearns, Alan Greenberg, all of whom are connected to Jeffrey Epstein. During his time of Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, Lauder was also very active in Israeli politics and had already become an ally of the then Israeli representative to the United Nations and future Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. Lauder would go on to be one of the most important individuals in Netanyahu's rise to power, particularly during his upset victory in 1996 and a major financier of Israel's right-wing Likud party. In 1986, the year that Roy Cohn died, Lauder left his post at the Pentagon and became the U.S. ambassador to Austria, where his tenure was shaped by his confrontations with the then Austrian, president and former Nazi collaborator Kurt Waldheim. Lauder's interest in Austrian politics has continued well into recent years, culminating in accusations that he sought to manipulate the Austrian elections in 2012. After leaving his ambassadorship, Lauder founded the Ronald S. Lauder Foundation in 1987 and later went on to run for mayor of New York against Rudy Giuliani in 1989. Lauder was encouraged to run by then-Senator Alphonse D'Amato, who had close ties to Roy Cohn and his longtime law partner, Tom Bolin, who was D'Amato's advisor. At the aforementioned 1983 Banai Brit Dinner honoring Cohen, D'Amato was the featured speaker. The likely reason was that Giuliani, though once an ally of the Roy Cohn machine, was at the time deeply disliked by the late Cohn's associate for prosecuting Cohn's former law partner, Stanley Friedman, for racketeering, conspiracy, and other charges. Giuliani also had a history of bitter disagreements with D'Amato. Lauder's primary campaign, though unsuccessful, was noted for its viciousness and its cost, as it burned through more than $13 million. A few years later, in the early 1990s, Lauder would join a newly formed group that has long evaded scrutiny from the media, but has recently become of interest in connection with the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, the Mega Group. Lauder, Epstein, and the mysterious Austrian passport. Before getting into the Mega Group, it's worth noting one particular act apparently undertaken by Lauder while he was the U.S. ambassador to Austria that has recently come to light in relation to the arrest in early July of Jeffrey Epstein. A finding first reported by journalist Edwin Zoll when police recently discovered an Austrian passport with Epstein's picture and a fake name after raiding his Manhattan residence, the source and purpose of this passport came under media scrutiny. According to the Associated Press, Epstein's defense lawyer specifically argued that a friend gave it to him, meaning Epstein, in the 1980s, after some Jewish Americans were informally advised to carry identification bearing a non-Jewish name when traveling internationally during a period when hijackings were more common. This claim appears to be related to concerns that followed the hijacking of Air France Flight 139 in 1976, when Israel and Jewish hostages were separated from other hostages based largely on the passports in their possession. Given that Epstein was unable to meet the conventional qualification for an Austrian passport, including long-term residency in Austria, the passport, by the way, lists him as a resident of Saudi Arabia. And the residency, and also the fluency in German, it appears that the only way to have acquired an Austrian passport was by unconventional means, meaning assistance from a well-connected Austrian official or foreign diplomat with clout in Austria. Lauder, then ambassador to Austria for the Reagan administration, would have been well positioned to acquire such a passport, particularly for the reasons cited by Epstein's attorneys that Jewish Americans could be targeted during travel, and in light of Lauder's very public concerns over threats Jews face from certain terror groups. Furthermore, the passport had been issued in 1987 when Lauder was still serving as ambassador. In addition, Lauder was well connected to Epstein's former patron, former head of Bear Stearns, Alan Greenberg, who had hired Epstein in the late 70s, immediately after the latter was fired from the Dalton School, and Donald Trump, another friend of Lauder and Greenberg, who began his friendship with Epstein in 1987. The same year, the fake Austrian passport was issued. In 1987, Epstein also began his relationship with his principal financier, Leslie Wexner, who was also closely associated with Lauder. Through some sources claim that Epstein and Wexner first met in 85, but their strong business relationship was not established until 1987. Through Epstein's defense attorney declined to reveal the identity of the friend who provided him with a fake passport, Lauder was both well positioned to acquire it in Austria and also deeply connected to the Mega Group, which was co-founded by Epstein's patron, Leslie Wexner, and to which Epstein has many connections. These connections to both the Austrian government and Epstein's mentor make Lauder the most likely person to have acquired the document on Epstein's behalf. Furthermore, Epstein and Omega Group's ties to the Israeli intelligence agency, Mossad, also suggest Lauder was involved in procuring the passport in light of his close ties to the Israeli government and the fact that the Mossad has a history of using ambassadors abroad to procure false foreign passports for its operatives. Lauder himself had been alleged to have ties to Mossad, as he is a longtime funder of the IDC, Herzliya, an Israeli university closely associated with Mossad and their recruiters, as well as the Israeli intelligence, military intelligence. Lauder even founded IDC, that's the Lauder School of Government, Diplomacy, and Strategy. Furthermore, Lauder co-founded the Eastern European Broadcasting Network, CETV, with Mark Palmer, former U.S. diplomat, Kissinger aide, and Reagan speechwriter. Palmer is better known for co-founding the National Endowment for Democracy, an organization often described as an accessory to the U.S. intelligence, and one whose first president confessed to the Washington Post that, and I'm quoting, "A lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA. A 2001 report in the Evening Standard noted that Epstein once claimed that during the 1980s, he worked for the CIA, but Epstein later backed away from that assertion. The origins of the mega group mafia. The mega group, a secretive group of billionaires to which Lauder belongs, was formed in 1991 by Charles Bronfman and Leslie Wexner, the latter of whom has received considerable media scrutiny following the July arrest of his former protege, Jeffrey Epstein. Media profiles of the group painted as a loosely organized club of 20 of the nation's wealthiest and most influential Jewish businessmen, focused on philanthropy and Jewishness. With membership dues upwards of $30,000 a year, yet several of the most prominent members have ties to organized crime. Now, mega group members founded and or are closely associated with some of the most well-known pro-Israel organizations. For instance, members Charles Bronfman and Michael Steinhardt formed Birthright Taglit with the backing of then and current Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Steinhardt, an atheist, has stated that his motivation in helping to found the group was to advance his own belief that devotion to and faith in the State of Israel should serve as a substitute for Jewish theology. Other well-known groups associated with the mega group include the World Jewish Congress, whose past president, Edgar Bronfman, and current president, Ronald Lauder, are both mega group members, and B'nai B'rith, particularly its spinoff known as the Anti-Defamation League. The Bronfman brothers were major donors to the ADL, with Edgar Bronfman serving as the ADL's honorary national vice chair for several years. While Edgar Bronfman died in 2013, longtime ADL director Abe Foxman said, and I'm quoting, "Dear Abe, Edgar was for many years chair of our liquor industry division, chair of our New York appeal, and one of our most significant benefactors." Other mega group members that are donors and major supporters of the ADL include Ronald Lauder, Michael Steinhardt, and the late Max Fisher. As previously mentioned, Roy Cohn's father was a longtime leader of B'nai B'rith, their influential New England, New York chapter, and Cohn was later a celebrated member of its banking and finance lodge. In addition, mega group's members have also been key players in the pro-Israeli lobby in the United States. For instance, Max Fisher of the mega group founded the National Jewish Coalition, now known as the Republican Jewish Coalition, the main pro-Israel neoconservative political lobbying group known for its support of hawkish policies, and whose current chief patrons, Sheldon Adelson and Bernard Marcus, are among Donald Trump's top donors. Through the mega group has officially existed only since 1991. The use of philanthropy to provide cover for more unscrupulous lobbying or business activities was pioneered decades earlier by Sam Bronfman, the father of megagroup members Edgar and Charles. While other North American elites like J.D. Rockefeller had previously used philanthropic giving as a means of laundering their reputations, Bronfman's approach to philanthropy was unique because it was focused on giving specifically to other members of his own ethno-religious background. Now, Sam Bronfman, as was detailed in part one of the series, had long-standing deep ties to organized crime. Specifically, Meyer Lansky, organized crime syndicate, yet Bronfman's private ambition, according to those closest to him, was to become a respected member of high society. Not bad for a bootlegger, I would say. As a consequence, Bronfman worked hard to remove the stain that the mob associations had left on his public reputation in Canada and abroad. He accomplished this by becoming a leader in Canada's Zionist movement. And by the end of the 1930s, he was head of the Canadian Jewish Congress and had begun to make a name for himself as a philanthropist for Jewish causes. Yet even son Bronfman's activism and philanthropy had hints of the mobster-like reputation he tried so hard to shake. For instance, Bronfman was actively involved in the illegal shipping of arms to Zionist paramilitaries in Palestine prior to 1948, specifically as co-founder of the National Conference for Israel and Jewish Rehabilitation that smuggled weapons to the paramilitary group Haganah. At the same time Bronfman was abetting the illegal smuggling of weapons to Haganah, his associates in the criminal underworld were doing the same. After World War II, close aides of David Ben-Gurion, who would later become the first prime minister of Israel, and was instrumental in the founding of the Mossad, forged tight-knit relationships with Meyer Lansky, Benjamin Bugsy Siegel, Mickey Cohen, and other Jewish gangsters of the period. They used their clandestine networks to establish a vast arms smuggling network between the United States and Zionist settlements in Palestine. Any of this starting to sound familiar to you? Arming both the Haganah and the Ergun paramilitary groups. As noted in part one of this report, at the same time these gangsters were aiding the illegal arming of the Zionist paramilitaries, they were strengthening their ties to U.S. intelligence that had first been formally, though covertly, established in World War II. After Israel was founded, Sam Bronfman worked with future Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres to negotiate the sale of Canadian armaments at half price to Israel, and the bargain weapons purchase was paid for entirely by a fundraising dinner hosted by Bronfman and his wife. Many years later, Peres would go on to introduce another future Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Barak, to a one, Jeffrey Epstein. The rest of the Bronfman's family's march on the road to respectability was undertaken by Bronfman's children, who married into the aristocratic families such as the European Rothschilds and the Wall Street royalty of the Lehmans and the Loebs. The Bronfman's newfound respectability did not mean their association with the Lansky-led criminal empire had dissolved. Indeed, prominent members of the Seagram's dynasty came under fire in the 1960s and 70s for their close association with Willie, known as Obi Abrant, a major figure in Canadian organized crime, when Canadian professor Stephen Schneider has referred to as Meyer Lansky of Canada. We'll pick up exactly where we leave off. We'll take the bottom of the hour break here. We're going to go break free until the top of the hour and then repeat it in the second hour. I hope you're paying attention here, because what's being described are the people in the deep state.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
OMG! People are jumping on board to the Life Change Tea Regiment. Brew, steep, and drink for a gentle, taste-great cleanse. It's changing how they feel. See what everybody's talking about. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Life Change Tea aids in digestive slowdown and helps people get moving down a healthy path. We won't make claims. We'll just let you decide. Experience is much better than a commercial anyway. If you want results, log on to GetTheTea.com and purchase your Super Strength Cleansing Tea. You won't be disappointed. And if you're looking for some mind-body suggestions, go to YouTube and punch in the search bar Health Matters Now. That's Health Matters Now. Put power into your health now. So, GetTheTea.com, that's GetTheTea.com for Super Strength Tea. And YouTube, Health Matters Now. That's Health Matters Now for valuable suggestions. GetTheTea.com, the tea that makes you go.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix a problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
However, Edgar and Charles Bronfman were hardly the only members of the Mega Group. That's M-E-G-A, by the way, not to be confused with M-A-G-A, Make America Great Again. But kind of sounds alike, doesn't it? With deep and long-standing ties to the Lansky-led National Crime Syndicate. Indeed, one of the group's prominent members, hedge fund manager Michael Steinhardt, opened up about his own family ties to Lansky in his autobiography, No Bull, My Life in and Out of the Markets, where he noted that his father, Saul, Red McGee Steinhardt, was Lansky's jewel fence of choice and a major player in New York's criminal underworld. Saul Steinhardt was also his son's first client on Wall Street and helped him jumpstart his career in finance. The ties between the Mega Group and the National Crime Syndicate don't stop there. Another prominent member of the Mega Group with ties to the same criminal network is Max Fisher, who has been described as Wexner's mentor and is also alleged to have worked with Detroit's Purple Gang during Prohibition and beyond. The Purple Gang were part of the network that smuggled Bronfman liquor from Canada into the United States during Prohibition, and one of its founders, Abe Bernstein, was a close associate of both Meyer Lansky and Mo Dalitz. Fisher was a key advisor to several U.S. presidents, beginning with Dwight D. Eisenhower, as well as to Henry Kissinger. In addition to Fisher, Mega Group member Ronald Lauder was connected to Roy Cohn and Tom Bolin, both of whom were closely associated with the same Lansky-led crime network, and who regularly represented top mafia figures in court. Furthermore, another member of the Mega Group, director Steven Spielberg, is a well-known protege of Lou Wasserman, the mob-connected media mogul and longtime backer of Ronald Reagan's film and later his political career, discussed in part two of this series. One surprise connection to Cohn involves Mega Group member and former president of the U.S. weapons firm General Dynamics, Lester Crown, whose brother-in-law is David Shine, Cohn's confidant and alleged lover during the McCarthy hearings, whose relationship with Cohn helped bring about the downfall of McCarthyism. Another member of the Mega Group was worth noting is Lawrence Tisch, who owned CBS News for several years and founded Lowe's Corporation. Tisch is notable for his work for the Office of Strategic Services, or the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, where Donald Barr, who hired Epstein at the Dalton School, also served, and which forged ties with Lansky's criminal empire during World War II. Wexner's Mansions and the Shapiro Murder. Leslie Les Wexner, the other Mega Group co-founder, also has ties to organized crime. Wexner's ties to Jeffrey Epstein have come under scrutiny following the latter's recent arrest, as Wexner was the only publicly acknowledged client of Epstein's suspicious hedge fund, the source of much of his wealth, and the previous owner of Epstein's $56 million Manhattan townhouse, which Wexner transferred to an Epstein-controlled entity for free. Before Epstein received the townhouse, Wexner appears to have used the residence for some unconventional purposes. Noted in the 1996 New York Times article of the then Wexner-owned residence, which included, and I'm quoting their article, a bathroom reminiscent of James Bond movies, hidden beneath a stairway lined with lead to provide shelter from attack and supplied with closed-circuit television screens and a telephone, both concealed in a cabinet beneath the sink. The Times article does not speculate as to the purpose of this equipment, though the allusion to famous fictional super spy James Bond suggests that it may have been used to snoop on guests or conduct electronic surveillance. The 1996 Times article also noted that after Wexner bought the residence for $13.2 million in 1989, he spent millions more decorating and furnishing the home, including the addition of the electronic equipment in a James Bond bathroom, only to apparently never live in it. The Times, which interviewed Epstein for the piece, quoted him as saying that Les never spent more than 2 months there. Epstein told the Times, which identified Epstein as Wexner's protege and one of his financial advisors, that the house by that time already belonged to him. That same year, Epstein was commissioning artwork for Wexner's Ohio mansion. A recent article from the Times noted that in the summer of 1996, Maria Farmer was working on an art project for Mr. Epstein in Mr. Wexner's Ohio mansion. While she was there, Mr. Epstein sexually assaulted her, according to an affidavit that Ms. Farmer filed earlier this year in federal court in Manhattan. She said that she fled the room and called the police, but Mr. Wexner's security staff refused to let her leave for 12 hours. Farmer's account strongly suggests that given the behavior of his personal security staff at his mansion following Epstein's alleged assault on Farmer, Wexner was well aware of Epstein's predatory behavior towards young women. This is compounded by claims made by Alan Dershowitz, a former lawyer for and friend of Epstein's, who has also been accused of raping underage girls, that Wexner has also been accused of raping underage girls exploited by Epstein on at least 7 occasions. the presence of the electronic equipment in his home's bathroom, other oddities related to the townhouse, and aspects of the link between Epstein and Wexner suggest there is more to Wexner, who has rather successfully developed a public image of a respectable businessman and philanthropist, much like other prominent members of the mega group. However, bits and pieces of Wexner's private secrets have occasionally bubbled up, only to be subjected to rapid cover-ups amidst concerns of libeling the powerful and well-connected billionaire philanthropist. In 1985, in Columbus, Ohio, lawyer Arthur Shapiro was murdered in broad daylight at point-blank range in what was largely referred to as a mob-style murder. The homicide still remains unsolved, likely due to the fact that the then Columbus police chief, James Jackson, ordered the destruction of key documents of his department's investigation into the murder. Jackson's ordering of the documents and its destruction came to light years later in 1996, when he was under investigation for corruption. According to the Columbus Dispatch, Jackson justified the destruction of one viable and valuable report because he felt that it was so filled with wild speculation about prominent business leaders that it was potentially libelous. The nature of this wild speculation was that millionaire businessmen in Columbus and Youngstown were linked to the mob-style murder. Though Jackson's effort was meant to keep this libelous report far from the public view, it was eventually obtained by Bob Fetrakis, attorney, journalist, and executive director of the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, after he was accidentally sent a copy of the report in 1998 as part of a public records request. The report, titled Shapiro Homicide Investigation, Analysis and Hypothesis, names Leslie Wexner as linked with associates reputed to be organized crime figures, and also lists the names of businessman Jack Kessler, former Columbus City Council president, and Wexner associate Jerry Hammond, and former Columbus City Council member Les Wright, as also being involved in Shapiro's murder. Now, the report also noted that Arthur Shapiro's law firm, Schwartz Shapiro Kalman Warren, represented Wexner's company, The Limited, and states that prior to his death, Arthur Shapiro managed this account, being the company, The Limited, for the law firm. He also noted that at the time of his death, Shapiro was the subject of an investigation by the IRS because he had failed to file income tax returns for some 7 years prior to his death, and he had invested in some questionable tax shelters. It also stated that his death prevented Shapiro from his planned testimony at a grand jury hearing about these questionable tax shelters. As to Wexner's alleged links to organized crime, the report focuses on the close business relationship between Wexner's The Limited and Francis Walsh, whose trucking company had done in excess of 90% of the Limited's trucking business around the time of Shapiro's murder. According to the report, Walsh was named in the 1988 indictment as co-conspirator of Genovese crime family boss Anthony Fat Tony Salerno, whose longtime lawyer was Roy Cohn. And the Shapiro murder report stated that Walsh was still considered associates of the Genovese and LaRocco crime family, and Walsh was still providing truck transportation for the company, The Limited. Notably, the Genovese crime family has long formed a key part of the National Crime Syndicate, as its former head, Charles Lucky Luciano, co-created the criminal organization with his close friend, Meyer Lansky. Upon Luciano's imprisonment and subsequent deportation from the United States, Lansky took over the syndicate's U.S. operations, and his association with Luciano's successors continued until Lansky's death in 1983. The Mega Mystery and the Mossad. In May of 1997, the Washington Post broke an explosive story, long since forgotten, based on an intercepted phone call made between a Mossad official in the U.S. and his superior in Tel Aviv that discussed the Mossad's efforts to obtain a secret U.S. government document. According to the Post, the Mossad official stated during the phone call that Israeli ambassador Elihu Ben Elazar had asked him whether he could obtain a copy of the letter given to the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat by then Secretary of State Christopher Warren on January 16th, the day after the Hebron Accord was signed by Arafat and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Post article continued, quoting them, "According to the source who viewed a copy of the NSA transcript of the conversation, the intelligence officer speaking in Hebrew said, 'The ambassador wants me to go to Mega to get a copy of this letter.' The source said that the supervisor in Tel Aviv rejected the request, saying, 'This is not something we use Mega for.' The leaked communication led to an investigation that sought to identify an individual codenamed Mega that the Post said may be someone in the U.S. government who has provided information to the Israelis in the past, a concern that subsequently spawned a fruitless FBI investigation. The Mossad later claimed that Mega was merely a code word for the U.S. CIA, but the FBI and the NSA were unconvinced by that claim and believed that this was a senior U.S. government official who had potentially once been involved in working with Jonathan Pollard, the former U.S. naval intelligence analyst later convicted of spying for the Mossad. Almost 1 year to the day after the mega spy scandal broke, the Wall Street Journal was the first outlet to report on the existence of a little-known organization of billionaires that was informally called the Mega Group and had been founded years prior in 1991. The report made no mention of the spy scandal that had spread concerns of Israeli espionage in the U.S. only a year prior. However, the group's distinctive informal name and the connections of its members to the Mossad and to high-ranking Israeli politicians, including prime ministers, raised the possibility that Mega was not an individual, as the FBI and the NSA had believed, but a group. In 1997, when Mega spy scandal broke, Netanyahu had recently become Prime Minister of Israel after an upset victory, a victory that was largely credited to one well-connected Netanyahu backer in particular, a one Ronald Lauder. Beyond being a major donor, Lauder had brought Arthur Finkelstein on to work for Netanyahu's 1996 campaign, whose strategies were credited for Netanyahu's surprise win. Netanyahu was close enough to Lauder that he personally enlisted Lauder and George Nader to serve as his peace envoys to Syria. Nader, who was connected to the Trump 26 campaign and Trump ally and Blackwater founder Eric Prince, was recently hit with federal child sex trafficking charges last month, soon after Epstein had been arrested on similar charges. At the time, Nader was picked to work with Lauder on Netanyahu's behalf. He'd already been caught possessing large amounts of child pornography on two separate occasions, first in 1984 and then later in 1990. The strong connection between Netanyahu and Lauder during that time of the 1997 mega spy scandal is important considering Mossad answers directly to Israel's prime minister. Another possible connection between the Mega Group and the Mossad owes to the Mega Group's ties to Meyer Lansky's criminal network. As was detailed, Lansky had established deep ties to U.S. intelligence after World War II and was also connected to the Mossad through Mossad official Tibor Rosenbaum, whose bank was frequently used by Lansky to launder money. In addition, Lansky corroborated on at least one occasion with notorious Mossad super spy Rafi Eitan. who helped acquire sensitive electronic equipment possessed only by the CIA but converted by Israeli intelligence. Eaton is best known in the U.S. for being the Mossad handler of Jonathan Pollard. Now, notably, Eaton was the main source of claims that the code word MEGA was used by the Mossad officials in 1997, referred to the CIA and not to a potential source in the U.S. government once linked to Pollard's spying activities, making his claim as to the true meaning of the term somewhat dubious. Given that the organized crime network tied to the MEGA group had ties to both U.S. and Israeli intelligence, the MEGA code word could plausibly have referred to the secretive group of billionaires. More supporting evidence of this theory comes from the fact that prominent members of the MEGA group were business partners of Mossad agents, including media mogul Robert Maxwell and commodity trader Mark Rich. The mysterious Maxwells. The Maxwell family has become a source of renewed media interest following Jeffrey Epstein's arrest. As Ghislaine Maxwell, long described in the media as a British socialite, was publicly cited as Epstein's longtime on-and-off girlfriend. And Epstein's victims, as well as former wives of Epstein's friends, have claimed that she was Epstein's pimp and procured underage girls for a sexual blackmail operation. Ghislaine Maxwell is also alleged to have engaged in the rape of girls she procured for Epstein and to have used them to produce child pornography. Ghislaine was the favorite and youngest daughter of the media mogul Robert Maxwell. Maxwell, born Jan Ludwig Hawk, had joined the British Army in World War II. Afterwards, according to authors John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, he greatly influenced the Czechoslovakian government's decision to arm Zionist paramilitaries during the 1948 war that resulted in Israel's creation as a state. And Maxwell himself was also involved in the smuggling of aircraft parts to Israel. Around this time, Maxwell was approached by British intelligence outfit MI6 and offered a position that Maxwell ultimately declined. MI6 then classified him as Zionist, loyal only to Israel, and made him a person of interest. He later became an agent of the Mossad, according to several books, including Robert Maxwell's Israel's Super Spy by Gordon Thomas and Martin Dillon. Furthermore, Seymour Hersh's The Samson Option, Israel's Nuclear Arsenal and American Foreign Policy, alleges ties between Maxwell and the Israeli intelligence. According to Victor Ostrowski, the former Mossad case officer, quoting, Mossad was financing many of its own operations in Europe from money stolen from Maxwell's newspaper pension fund. They got their hands on the funds almost as soon as Maxwell made the purchase of the Mirror newspaper group with the money lent to him by the Mossad. In exchange for his services, the Mossad helped Maxwell satisfy sexual appetites during his visits to Israel, providing him with prostitutes, the service maintained for blackmail purposes. It was later revealed that a hotel in which he stayed in Israel was bugged, had cameras allowing the Mossad to acquire a small library of video footage of Maxwell in sexually compromising positions. As with the CIA, the Mossad's use of blackmail against both friend and foe is well documented and known to be extensive. Maxwell, also a close associate and friend of Israeli super spy Rafi Eaton, who, as previously mentioned, was Jonathan Pollard's handler and who had previously worked directly with Meyer Lansky. Eaton had learned of a revolutionary new software being used by the U.S. government known as Promise, from Earl Bryan, a longtime associate and aide to Ronald Reagan. Promise is often considered the forerunner to the PRISM software used by spy agencies today and was developed by William Hamilton, who leased the software to the U.S. government through his company, Inslaw, in 1982. According to author and former BBC investigative journalist Gordon Thomas, Brian was angry that the U.S. Department of Justice was successfully using Promise to go after organized crime and money laundering activities, and Eaton felt that the program could aid Israel. At the time, Eaton was the director of the now-defunct Israeli military intelligence agency, LICOM, which gathered scientific and technical intelligence abroad from both public and covert sources, especially in relation to Israel's nuclear weapons program. A plan was hatched to install a trap door into the software and then market Promise throughout the world, providing the Mossad with invaluable intelligence on the operations of its enemies and allies, while also providing Eaton and Brian with copious amounts of cash. According to the testimony of ex-Mossad official Ari Ben Menashe, Brian provided a copy of Promise to Israel's military intelligence, which contacted an Israeli-American programmer living in California, who then planted the trapdoor in the software. The CIA was later said to have installed its own trapdoor in the software, but it is unknown if they did so with a version of the already bugged software and how widely it was adopted relative to the version bugged by the Israeli intelligence. After trapdoor was inserted, the problem became selling the bugged version of the software to governments as well as private companies around the world. Particularly in areas of interest, Brian first attempted to buy out Inslaw and Promise and then use that same company to sell the bugged version. Unsuccessful, Brian turned to his close friend, then attorney General Ed Meese, whose Justice Department then abruptly refused to make the payments to Inslaw that were stipulated by the contract, essentially using the software for free, which Inslaw claimed to be theft. Some have speculated that Meese's role in that decision was shaped not only by his friendship with Brian, but the fact that his wife, a major investor in Brian's business ventures, Meese would later become an advisor to Donald Trump when he was president-elect. Inslaw was forced to declare bankruptcy as a result of Meese's actions and sued the Justice Department. The court later found that the Meese-led department stole the software through trickery, fraud, and deceit. With Inslaw out of the way, Brian sold the software all over the world. Eaton later recruited Robert Maxwell to become another Promise salesman, which he did remarkably well, even succeeding in selling the software to Soviet intelligence and conspiring with Republican Texas Senator John Tower to have the software adopted by the U.S. government laboratory at Los Alamos. Dozens of countries used the software on their most carefully guarded computer systems, unaware that the Mossad now had access to everything Promise touched. We'll take top of the hour break here, folks. Timing this out, I'm only halfway through this. And there is more ties. We're talking the deep state, the real operatives, not the sock puppets they keep shoving in front of the TV cameras. We'll be right back. It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.